Join us at Money Marketing Interactive Leeds on Thursday, 11th May. Just go to Money Marketing's website to secure your seat at our industry-leading event and hear from notable figures in the industry. See you there. Hello and welcome to the Money Marketing Podcast. We're back again for our end of month podcast, and I'm joined by the editorial team and by me, I mean Kim. I always say Kimberly. I'm changing it up and saying Kim, digital content manager.
And Mike, acting editor.
Hi, I'm Lois, chief reporter.
I'm Maria, features editor.
I'm Amanda, feature writer.
JV, senior reporter.
And we have a new starter because we have someone leaving. We're going to talk about that later, but we have Darius with us. So Darius, if you want to give us a little introduction about you, who you are, what you've done previously a little bit, and what you'll be doing with us at Money Marketing.
Yeah, thank you, Kim. Yeah, hi, I'm Darius. I'm a new investment reporter for Money Marketing. Prior to this, I was reports for capital.com, write about investments, and I was previously an online finance reporter for Daily Express. But yeah, I'm really excited to join the team, and let's see what happens.
Yeah, glad to have you, because you, as I mentioned, we do have someone who's leaving us. JB, finally, you decided you've had enough, I guess.
No, I just figured out that there was a patch I was more interested in than others, and I wanted to focus on it. So that's what that was the main factor in my decision.
Yeah, I guess some people are going to miss you.
Maybe.
A big maybe.
Yeah, of course we will.
But do you want to start us off then, since you will be leaving us? What did you cover in February, like, that you stood out for you?
Rather than a specific story, I would say you're starting to feel that we're getting closer to the deadline for consumer duty. So there are more and more discussions about it. I don't know what the others think about it. Have you noticed the same dynamic or the same trend?
Yeah, it's on Twitter a lot. People tweeting about it loads and definitely talking about it more,
I think if January was a month of the, you know, the CI-PFS clash, February was probably consumer duty month.
Yeah, just everyone saying, well, if you haven't got your stuff together now, you're going to be in crisis soon.
Exactly.
Basically. But hopefully everyone gets their ducks in a row soon. Is there anything else that you might have covered that stood out for you in Feb?
Nothing particular, because I found it was overall much more quiet than January was.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I guess people are steadying out. Okay, cool. So, Lois, for you, what stood out for you in the February issue?
Well, I wrote the MM Meets, which was with GBST's CEO, Rob DeDominicus. And it was really good to chat to him. I actually wrote it quite a long time after I actually had the conversation with him. So it was quite difficult to put together, but I think it came out well. He said some really good stuff. So he was talking about how he's obviously CEO of GBST now, which is one of the biggest platform technology companies. Mm-hmm. He's based in Australia, but he'd come over to London to check on the UK branch of the business. So I took the opportunity to have lunch with him and interview him. And he was talking about how his journey from launching a sort of small software startup, which was then bought by, it was called Infocomp. It was then bought by GBST. So he joined the business to run that section of it. And then he was made CEO, I can't remember what year. It was a while ago, 2015 maybe.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, he was giving me lots of thoughts on platforms and where they're going, because there's lots of talk about platforms needing to adapt.
Revamp or die.
Yeah, exactly. Revamp or die. I was going to say adapt or die, but yeah, exactly. Yeah. So yeah, no, it was really good to talk to him. And it was fun going to an Italian restaurant with him, and seeing him speak fluent Italian with the waiters, and I was just sitting there going, I have no idea what you're saying. Could be saying anything, could be saying really horrible stuff about me, but I don't think he was.
No. I mean, such a flex, such a subtle flex, just to be like, I'm going to take you to this Italian restaurant and show you my fluent Italian.
To be fair, I picked the restaurant, but yeah.
Yeah, still, he was like, I'm going to show her, impress her.
But yeah, it was very impressive. And it was a very good interview. And you should read it.
Yeah, yeah, no, I think it was, it came out really well. And I'm going to move on to Amanda. What did you cover for the February issue that stood out for you?
Well, the one that stood out for me the most, Kim, was my In Focus piece, looking mm-hmm. at ethnic diversity. I mean, this is a subject close to my heart, and I'm aware that I've been banging on about it quite a bit recently. But, you know, having been brought up in a multicultural area of London, I think that was the thing that really stood out for me when I joined Money Marketing was, you know, how the, you know, the advice profession wasn't as diverse as the community that I was living in. And that was like mm-hmm. kind of a bit of an eye-opener for me, really. So that's why I'm banging the drum, really. I mean, I sort of base this report on my own sort of observations that I think, you know, ethnic diversity is not covered as much as gender diversity. And I was looking at some of the reasons why as a starter to kind of lead me into that piece. And that was kind of interesting as well, because people were talking to me about the gender pay gap and how that's kind of, you know, the legislation behind that is the reason why gender diversity is kind of getting a little bit more attention than ethnic diversity. But it's not the kind of like whole reason. I spoke to Noreen Biddle Shah. She's from a campaign group called Reboot. Mm-hmm. And I was looking at their report, and she was talking about the fact that, you know, these things kind of vary depending on where you live in the country. You know, some areas are more ethnically diverse than others. And, you know, that she was kind of saying to me that, you know, employers in advice firms and across financial services, you're not necessarily going to come from an area which is ethnically diverse. Mm-hmm. So, you know, as part of your social circle, your family circle, you may not necessarily come across it. So, you know, in effect, where's your issue? You know, as an employer, I'm only employing local people in my area, people I know. You know, what am I doing wrong? You know, there's not an issue there for me. So it was kind of that kind of thing I never thought about. Whereas, you know, comparing it to gender, everyone's got, you know, mothers, sisters, daughters. So it's a kind of more in your face issue for some people than ethnic diversity is. And I must admit, I never thought about that, Kim. It was kind of, you know, a bit of an eye opener for me, that one. But shall I go on? Because there is a little bit more about that I want to say.
Yeah, so, yeah, definitely.
I kind of, you know, we're all aware that, you know, it is potentially an issue. You know, we'd like to see, you know, as many people in the advice profession as we can, really. And yeah, one of the things that I was speaking to people about was employee resources groups. You know, you can sort of set the agenda there to whatever element of diversity you want, whether it's gender or, you know, in this example, ethnic diversity. And I found that interesting because I have a friend who is in financial services, and he is part of the diversity inclusion resource group at his place. And because mm-hmm. it relies on volunteers, and, you know, everyone's got their own stuff to do, he found that, you know, participation in this stuff was quite low. And it's, you know, speaking to people about how we can improve this, it's, you kind of get into situations where, you know, are you going to take workload from people who volunteer for this stuff? You know, they've still got their own jobs to do, and that is a factor. So they'll start off really enthusiastic, and then, you know, oh, I've got so much to do, I can't commit anymore. So
yeah,
I was speaking to people about that, saying, you know, we need senior leadership behind these things. And that's sort of how we can start. You know, these groups exist to kind of give people a voice, and, you know, any sort of underrepresented talent groups to represent there, and, you know, get ideas from them how to boost, you know, the company's representation across various things. So mm-hmm. it's kind of, if no one's turning up because they have other commitments, because senior management isn't as behind it as they say, then, you know, it's a little bit sad, really. So
yeah.
So that
I think there's also like a thought process between like people with people of color. They're like, I don't know how much more I can give, you know, like joining this panel, what change will actually be made. Like you said, if like seniors, executives within the company aren't actively involved themselves, no change really will come about. It always has to come from the top, and you can join a panel and come up with all these ideas and these days and kind of have difficult conversations. But what if you don't see any tangible change, you kind of get disheartened, and then you're just like, okay, I'm just going to come to work and do my job and then I'll go home. And I think, yeah, it's just a really hard thing to juggle.
Yeah, agreed. And can I just, I know I sort of, I was gonna say banging on about this, but I did kind of end with a point that we need some data on this, because that, you know, the gender pay gap data seems to be something that's, you know, the differential here, because there's no kind of equivalent for ethnicity. And it's like, we need more data on, you know, representation of different ethnic backgrounds, so we can sort of measure this stuff and know if what we're doing is actually working or not. And I think that's the bit that people are sort of fiddling with at the moment. They're just sort of trying to work out what they can do there. But that to me is, you know, a whole new thing there, the kind of data issue. That's another feature in itself. So I probably better let someone else start speaking.
So Mike, what about you? What stood out for you in Feb?
So just in the Feb issue, I just wrote a leader for the Feb magazine on the CII and the PFS bust up, and just how much they have to lose.
Mm-hmm.
And just saying that although there's a very lot of strong emotion on both sides, if it doesn't get resolved, everyone's probably going to be net losers. And that was just sort of the main message of the piece that I wrote. And it was just sort of taking stock of what really is
at stake.
A kind of conflict and things have escalated to quite a lot. My route into it initially was that there was just a meeting, PFS kind of, I think it was consultation meeting, and I attended it. Mm-hmm. And the CII, Alan Valance, chief executive, gave a kind of opening speech, and just the reaction to that from PFS members was very strong, and the people really weren't holding back, and it just made me realize, things are quite bad.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't really see how things can be resolved, because they have kind of really quite different accounts of what's happened, and it doesn't seem to me to be very bridgeable. I could be wrong, but it's both sides can't be right in this case, based on what's has been, you know, they've accused each other of. So that's kind of quite interesting.
So basically, you're saying that the possibility of some middle ground resolution are pretty bleak.
My sense is that I didn't say as much in the piece, but my piece was really about that, you know how much there is to lose if it's not resolved. But my sense from that meeting was that, it just as an outside observer, it seems pretty strong feeling on both sides.
Very strange. I've never written about a sector where the professional bodies are so have had so much hate for each other. It's strange. It's usually like companies clashing, but when professional bodies clash, it's quite worrying.
I don't know if hate's a big word, but there is but there is definitely kind of intense
dislike.
Dislike, yeah, and kind of what is it? Partisanship is the word. Kind of two sides dug in.
Well, I'll be interested to see where we are at the end of this year and see how it all pans out. What about you, Maria? What stood out for you in February?
Well, we had a piece from Robin Powell go in and kindly sent us our best read of the month, and he's up there. And he's always pretty no holds barred. He doesn't hold back, and this time he's laying into the FCA, which is great for our readers. They love something like that. So yeah, this time he's laying into the FCA on their simplified advice proposals And if you check out the comments on the article, I think it's safe to say he's speaking for lots of advisors' frustrations on the issues. For example, there's been questions raised at the focus on the FCA's plans. And basically, they want advice to cater for people that have smaller amounts of money to invest, but their proposals are kind of looking at putting it in ISAs as opposed to Robin Power. And a lot of people have been saying, well, what about pensions? What about insurance? You know, they're really important bedrocks of a financial plan. That was really interesting. And actually, the consultation responses to the consultation deadline is on the 28th of February. So there's still a little bit of time for people to get back to that. Another one that I just wanted to flag up was our new aspiring advisor columnist. So we have a diary of an aspiring advisor that goes in the mag each month. And I love these columns. I think they're really inspiring and it's such a nice community. So it's nice to tap into these stories of these advisors that are studying. Some amazing stories. And then this our newest guy is Nick Powell. Mm-hmm. And he actually currently plays for Championship Football Club Stoke City as well. So that's really interesting. He's playing Championship football and kind of living that life and training, and you know, that must just be huge. But he's studying to be an advisor at the same time. So it's a really interesting story, and it's a really nice one as well, because obviously he's been very fortunate on the money front from quite a young age.
Yeah.
And he admits himself that he's been so lucky to have some sensible heads around him to help invest that money. And he's nearing the time now where he's going to retire. I think he's actually only mid-30s, which is quite scary, but they have a lot shorter careers than most of us. So he's in a good position. But he recognises that there's an awful lot of sports people, not just footballers, but sports people generally, that haven't had that same help and are at risk of retiring quite early, but not having the financial backup. So, yeah, check that one out. I think that's really interesting.
Again, talking about, I think we talked about it previously, that like athlete to financial services pipeline is very strong. I don't know what it is. It just seems like a lot of people that we talk to have had like some athletic background professionally, and then they've decided, you know, when they're retiring, because they tend to retire so young, they go into this probably to manage their money better. I don't know. It's very interesting.
We must see some awful situations, because you know, we've all read it, haven't we, about those. You can't comprehend it yourself, of earning millions and millions and millions and then getting to a certain age and it's gone.
Yeah.
I mean, it must be easy to do. I can see how it happens. But when you look at the numbers like that, you just think, how does it happen? But so I guess if you're privy to a lot of stories like that, I don't know, maybe you've come close to it yourself, then it kind of puts that finance career front of mind, I guess. And a lot of people do need to go on to another career despite maybe earning more than we can imagine in their early years.
If you're kind of
mid-30s, it doesn't last forever, does it? So
no, it doesn't. And if you're like bills are a certain amount and then all of a sudden your paycheck gets cut completely, I can imagine you start to panic and go, what am I meant to do?
Is there a thing called lifestyle creep? Is that what I'm thinking of? And you become accustomed to a certain lifestyle. Mm-hmm, don't you? Mm-hmm. So, I can see how that happens.
Very interesting. I'll be interested to see his evolution. But Momodou, what about you? What stood out for you in February?
In terms of the mic, I did a comment piece. Mm-hmm. NHS, pension reforms. Mm-hmm. The crisis, I mean, between the doctors and the government, you know, and this has been going on, I mean, for a while, you know. So my piece was kind of like supporting doctors, I mean, position.
Yeah.
It should be kind of like giving all the supports, you know, because they're doing, a very, very vital service. I
mean, yeah. You know, so what is the doctor's position?
Well, the doctors wants, the government to kind of like reform the, the current pension rules. Mm. Because they have something on, kind of like they've been penalized in terms of high taxes. So they want their tax, brackets to kind of like arrange, you know. I mean, you have the lifetime allowance, you know, tax charge, which is forcing many doctors to kind of like either leave the NHS or kind of like put down on their hours. So that's, going on, you know. And the government launched a consultation last December to try to kind of like find a middle ground. But I think it's still ongoing, yeah. But the doctors' association, I mean, is it the BME? Kind of like saying that the consultation is too late for doctors. So yeah, I mean, we all see it on the news all the time, you know, that this thing is, I mean, it's still going on. Yeah, I don't know.
I just don't think that the government can really afford to keep pissing off medical staff if they want to keep those medical staff. Or maybe they don't. I don't know.
Well, the government don't want to budge. I mean, I think, I don't know. I think, I mean, the fear is if they give grounds to doctors, then you have other sectors, you know, also making demands. So I think maybe that's...
Maybe that's, just give them what they want. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that...
seems so easy for me to say. Yeah, I've always said I'd be a great world president. I mean, I'd definitely turn dictatory, but like a benevolent dictator.
Then please vote for Kim, eh? As PM. Eh?
Thanks, guys.
You have my vote, Kim, definitely.
Let me come next in.
Okay, so let's move over to the March issue and just get a little sneak peek. Is there anything that you worked on in the March issue that you'd like to talk about, Amanda?
Can I highlight my leader, Kim? Because I always seem to talk about the things that I'm most passionate about. And in my leader, I'm talking about financial education being made compulsory at primary school. I keep banging on about my kids, but I've got two kids at primary school and one at secondary school. And, you know, one of the reasons why I think that it should be compulsory in primary school is because, you know, by the time they get to secondary school age, you've got the dreaded academic jargon that comes in. And I think, you know, if you start at primary school with, you know, financial education, then you're starting from that basis where you don't get that jargon, and it'll create a nice simple base that people can build on. And I think, you know, I haven't really seen that argument around, so that's why I wanted to highlight my leader. But can I also squeeze in another couple of bits?
Yeah, of course.
I also look at whether it's time to scrap the money purchase annual allowance. I hated this when it came in, and I still hate it, but I think it's got new significance now that the government's cajoling older workers to get back to work. So, you know, I look at that there. I don't want to give too much away on that, but there is that as well. And I also look at spotting financial abuse, but that's it from me.
All like varying topics, but all very important topics. I like that.
Thank you.
And we'll probably talk about it more at our end of month in March podcast. So I'll ask you more questions then.
Okay, I look forward to it.
So JB, you have written your last cover for Money Marketing in the March issue. Can you give us a little sneak peek?
So it looks into what happened toward the end of last year and continued and is still continuing in the beginning of 2023, which is the kind of civil war between the CI and the PFS.
Yes, we mentioned it earlier.
Yes, we did. And I would say it's essentially a summary of what's happening and where we are at now. Obviously, it's still an ongoing issue, and it's probably something the rest of the team will have to cover once I'm gone, because it's far to be solved.
Yeah. Also, again, another shout out to Leon. I saw a little sneak peek of the cover, and again, it looks very cool. I just love the concept.
I just want to highlight that it was my idea.
Well, yeah, but he put it together. Jeez, credit where credit is due. Well done for coming up with the idea, but it's great when someone's able to put your idea on page.
I know, but usually I don't, you know, I don't give any indication, or I don't share any particular ideas of how I would like the cover to look like.
Uh-huh. But this time you had a specific idea in mind.
Yeah,
no, it's very cool. I like it.
If I may just share a small critique, I wanted, you know, that you have some small shadows of soldiers on the cover,
mm-hmm.
and I wanted them to be dressed in the style of, you know, the American Civil War.
Right.
Whereas in this case, it's more European style.
Yeah, well, I guess it wouldn't really make sense if it was, like, what was it, Confederates versus...
The Union.
The Union, yeah. Okay, well, in this case, who are the Confederates?
Are we abstained to make any...
That's actually quite a more controversial answer.
That would be super controversial. That's why I asked it. I wanted a nice little soundbite for when I'm promoting while JB's leaving so that he can get tagged on Twitter by either CII people or PMS people. That'll be a great leaving gift for you. But since you are leaving us, JB, I'm going to ask you, what have you learned in your time with money marketing that will probably stick with you?
A lot of things, because I don't have any background in finance. So I would say this, let's say almost two years were a very good and comprehensive introductions in the financial services industry and its different sectors. So yeah, definitely. And I'm not saying that out of politeness, but I think I've been well trained because it was my first job in journalism. So I guess I kind of improved as a writer.
Yeah.
And what's been your best moment at Money Marketing, JB?
Best moment.
Most exciting, made you smile the most.
Smile behind your hand so that no one can see it.
That's quite a curveball you just threw.
There's just so many, you can't pick one.
Yeah.
I would say there was no moment that made me angry, sad, or disappointed.
That's a JB.
That's a JB answer. Such a JB.
I was content most of the time, so.
That's good.
Well, I mean, coming from you, I guess that is like high praise. So thanks, JB. And again, like I said, you probably will be missed by some people.
Of course.
But seriously, good luck. On your journey and in everything you're doing, and don't be a stranger.
We do, thanks.
Maria, what about you? Is there anything else that's coming up in the March issue that you'd like to highlight?
So the beginning of March sees International Women's Day. So we've got a couple of pieces kind of looking around that theme. We've got a great piece from Emma Thompson about how the invisible load doesn't come for free. And next month, I am ready to talk about the invisible load because I could talk about that forever. But what she's basically saying is that if even say there's a female in the house that doesn't work or works mm-hmm. part-time or works less, she can often be overlooked for protection in conversations with advisors. And what Emma's saying is, you know, their work, whether it's paid or not, doesn't come for free. So it's really important to think about protecting women, regardless of you know, whether they work or not. You can read more about it then. We'll talk about it more next month. But it's just a subject close to my heart at the minute. So
being a stay-at-home wife or a stay-at-home mother, I think that is a job still. Like, it's just not a salaried job. Unless you arrange with your partner, this is how much I should make for looking after these kids 24 hours.
Well, I think LNG actually did a study. LNG did a campaign. I can't remember the figures, but it was called the value of mom or something. And they put a value on the work that a stay-at-home mum does because, I think there's all sorts of stats that come with that. But we can talk about that next month. But it's really interesting.
Wait.
Really interesting.
I'll have a lot of questions and probably a lot of opinions to share. So, yeah. What about you, Lois? Is there anything in the March issue that you want to highlight?
I wrote the MM Meets for the March issue too.
And you're on a roll.
This time it's with EQ Investors co-CEO Sophie Kennedy.
Mm-hmm.
So EQ Investors was a founding B Corp. I don't know if you know anything about B Corp, but it's basically a certification. It's like a environmental sustainability certification.
Okay.
And it's not just in finance. I mean, it's pan-sector. It's, you can, like, I used to write about them when I wrote for a food magazine. Lots of food and drink companies have gained B Corp accreditation. It's mm-hmm. It's a very rigorous process. It's very difficult to get. And so we talk quite a lot about that and why they became a founding B Corp in 2015 in the UK. Mm-hmm. And the idea is you recertify, I think it's every 3 years, and each time you have to get, so the minimum number of points you have to get to certify is 80. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember exactly how many EQ Investors got, but it's over 100 now.
Wow.
And the idea is to keep improving each time by focusing on specific areas. I think it's 5 specific areas that you have to focus on. But yeah, no, it's really interesting. I think B Corp's a great thing. So we talked quite a lot about that, and obviously about ESG, sustainable investing, all my favorite topics. So that was really good, and it was really good to chat to her. I also wrote a leader about artificial intelligence because I finally got onto ChatGPT and I've been having a lot of fun with it.
Yes. Yeah. It's been a lot of fun playing around in the office.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I think as it is at the moment, artificial intelligence, it's probably not much of a threat, but my point was, if you look at, so take the iPhone, for example, the first iPhone came out in 2007, I think it was, like the original iPhone. I don't even remember what it was like, but it was, what are we on now? iPhone 14.
Yeah.
And the level of development in that technology is just ridiculous over, 16 years.
Yeah. So, I mean, now there's Siri.
Yeah.
Siri wasn't a thing when it first came out.
Exactly. And nobody really uses their phones. Well, obviously you do use your phone for phone calls and texts, but it's so much more than that now. Like I rely on Google Maps. I wouldn't be able to live without my phone now because of Google Maps.
Yeah.
And the camera. I really love the camera. That's my favorite part, obviously. But yeah, if you just think about that level of technological advancement in that period of time.
Yeah.
Like AI within 5 years, artificial intelligence could be so much more intelligent. So I think when people say, oh, no, it's not a threat to anything, financial advice, journalism, they're only looking at it like it is now. Like, I agree, ChatGPT is not a threat to journalists right now, but who's to say in 5 or 10 years it won't be? So yeah,
I don't know, because I feel like mainstream wise, I've been seeing a lot of people saying it is a massive threat in terms of, like, I sent around a video of someone had used AI to create a scene where President Obama, Trump, and Biden were playing a game of Uno.
Oh yeah.
The video was, it was like a deep fake video, but it wasn't very good, but kind of convincing. But what was very convincing was the audio. It sounded exactly like each of them. So you could make those people say anything and trigger something. You know, it could be a linchpin to like World War III or something, just from a deep fake AI thing.
No, it's scary. But as I say in my leader, if AI gets intelligent and empathetic enough to take the jobs of financial advisors, maybe being jobless is not their biggest concern.
Yeah. Yeah.
It could probably take over the world.
I mean, so far it seems like ChatGPT is not able to show any level of empathy or prediction or make decisions.
Very creative. Like it can write, but it's just regurgitated information, and it's not. My feature intro for the April issue, which I won't talk about because that's way in the future, is way better than the one I got ChatGPT to write, just saying. So
yeah,
I have quite a lot of confidence in my own ability to write, so I don't see it as a threat yet.
There is no narrative storytelling at all with ChatGPT. That's one thing. Yeah. So we're fine for now in that respect.
Yeah, so that was me for the March issue.
And what about you, Momadou? Is there anything in the March issue that you wanted to highlight?
None. Sorry. Yeah, there's no contribution to this issue. Yet, so yeah, I'm out of it.
Okay. Is there anything in March that you're looking forward to looking into?
I mean, I think maybe JB Scopper, you know, mm-hmm. as I said, I mean, the CIA and DFS. So I think that's it.
Civil War. Yeah. You'll probably pick that up now since
I was going to say, are you gonna take over the cover?
Well, maybe. Well, very possibly.
I think you should like somehow make yourself not like a mole, but just place yourself right in the middle so that you can get all the juicy tea from everyone.
Yeah, I think that's the plan. You know, you have to have like kind of like a debriefing session with, JB.
yeah. Get all his contacts and people exactly. And just get slide right in there. Yeah, okay.
What's it called where you temporarily go and work for another company? Not sabbatical, the other one. The other word. Anyway, you could do that. You could go and work for the CIA, Momodou, and get all the scoops.
Oh, really?
Just temporarily, come back.
Do you mean secondment?
Secondment, that's secondment, it, yes.
Yeah,
there we go. Thanks, Amanda.
You're welcome.
Okay.
Well,
Mike, yeah. But if Mike can, give the go ahead, then why not, you know?
Yeah, well, what's it good to go and do like a kind of infiltrate?
Yeah, exactly.
Undercover.
Now we've blown our
cover. We said that now.
But just take it out, Kim.
Or have we? Maybe we're playing some weird mind game.
Yeah.
What about you, Mike? Is there anything in the March issue that you wanted to highlight?
Yeah, I think we've got loads of cracking content. I think the cover, the leaders, and the LM meets are really good. You know, and I think the two leaders, you know, the leader from Lois on the AI threat to financial advisors and the financial education at primary school from Amanda, both made me think a lot because they're sort of two sort of subjects which I don't kind of really know a lot about, but are really important. Mm. And then they're kind of making kind of really, really critical points about in a memorable way because of the quality of the writing about some kind of really fundamental issues, whether it would be, you know, AI threat or, and you know, jobs and education, which are kind of really important, you know, you know, to people. So from various perspectives. So I think those two are really worth looking at.
It makes me wonder, for like Amanda's primary school kids, what is life going to look like when they're like our ages? Because they're going to have this AI, they're going to have all the access to everything. And I just want to know what their life will be like. Because when I was looking at ChatGPT, one thing that I did think was very useful for essays, you can just input and say, I need 1,000 words on, you know, this particular topic, and it will possibly write something. Yeah, very quickly. But
I mean, but don't you think the teachers can pick that out? I mean, perhaps the choice of word in the construction of the essay.
Yeah, but then you just have to run it through a plagiarism thing just to make sure.
Yeah.
Even if it's not straight up plagiarism, it's doing the research for you, right? From what I understand. Yeah, exactly. So you can then, you know, that's a huge step in essay writing. It's it's mind blowing, isn't it?
Yeah, it can do all the research and then you can just reword it to sound like you.
Yeah.
But you're going to be having AI to catch AI, so you might have a school essay written by AI, then you'd have the software or whatever AI checking to see. So it would be sort of
very meta. That's blowing my mind.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's scary and also very interesting. I don't know. I'm excited to see where we go. I'm trying not to think of it as a massive dystopian future. I'm trying to hope that it's going to be really, it's utopian.
I'm really enjoying thinking of it as a massive dystopian future.
Well, you can't have one without the other. You can't have, you know.
But then also, Kim, I mean, I just want to ask, because you guys have been checking this GPT, you know, or something.
Uh-huh.
If me and you ask the same question, you know, to the ChatGPT, do we have the same response? Or
it's a good question. I don't know.
I don't know. We haven't tried that. Maybe we can try that later.
I mean, just to see it, because I mean, whether the issue of plagiarism or sameness, I mean, will come into play. If it gives the same answer all the time, you know, or rather if it changes same answer. I don't know.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. We'll test it out. Test it out. See what it does.
So I did ask it to write an editor's letter and a speech, a 3-minute speech. And I just asked it a question all on the same thing. I think I was asking what's the AI threat to financial advice. And the answers were slightly differently worded, but very similar in content.
Crazy. So maybe if Kim then asks the same question, or Mike or Mario, anyone, and then
see what happens.
Whether we have the same response and be in contrast.
Okay. Well, I'm very aware that, Darius, you haven't had a chance to say much. Obviously, you're quite new, so you're just like dipping your toes right now. But is there, what are you excited to experience, you know, joining the team?
I'm new. I think what I just quite like is the amount of sort of attention on advisors, and they clearly hold a lot of importance for a lot of people and help a lot of people with finances, which obviously is vital to everyone effectively. We have a lot of other competitors also focused on advisors as well, and there seems to be a big topic and, you know, change people's lives. I know my dad has recently started using an advisor because, as we've been saying, you know, they become sort of more important as you approach retirement age and sort of how to get your house in order. And my dad's sort of against that age. It's got a more personal sort of angle because of my dad. But yeah, they just seem to be really important. They really help or assist people, and, you know, it makes a big difference. And so, you know, in that sense, it is, even though it is obviously it's, financial topic, it's quite a personal people sort of angle to it as well, you know, because people go to it to, make their lives run better and so forth, and, you know, make sure during the cost of living crisis as well, you know, I mean, money's important, but money's getting more and more important. So yeah, I think really interesting time to join the team and to sort of dive into this topic. So yeah, but you know, everyone seems friendly and sort of happy to help and good to talk. So yeah, that's another great sign as well. Obviously, we're starting sort of a new beat. So yeah, I'm just eager to sort of get involved and, you know, to learn as much as I can from this new area.
Yeah. No, we are pretty friendly.
Usually.
Yeah.
And you should look forward to all the all the parties that the industry puts on. They're very fun.
They are very fun. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. There seems to be, yeah, already I can see there seems to be a reasonably social side to hallmark. So, yeah, no, I look forward to that as well. Yes.
Financial advisors do know how to enjoy themselves. I think that's true. That's true.
Financial advisors and fund managers.
Yes.
Was it like a work hard, play hard mentality sort of thing?
A work life balance is what.
Yes. Yeah. Don't neglect your real social life like I did last year.
Yeah. That became your social life. They're all your best mates now.
Yeah. None of them wanted anything from me. They're just my friends.
Yeah. Okay, well, thank you guys once again for coming together. And I look forward to picking this up at the end of March and talking to you more in depth about the March issue and our upcoming April issue as well. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.